Helos rose from his perch in the bay of our small parlor. I was beginning to wish that I'd had the sense to keep my dream a secret. But Ciri had demanded an explanation for the fresh burn over my heart, and whatever had happened to the temple, Ciri was the last of us to wear the title of Namra's first blade, my superior in the order still. When she asked the question, old loyalties read an order. Helos was a big man with one eye covered by an old leather patch and heavy with muscle, his skin a maze of scars and tattooed snake's coils. His familiar took the shape of a shadow basilisk, lying mostly invisible amongst the tattoos at the moment.
Namra wants you to go after the Son of Heaven. That was the message, isn't it obvious?
No, not to me anyway. I'm not certain that my dream was anything more than my subconscious fulfilling my wish to see her again.
Which left you with a burn scar on your chest.
Ciri sat next to me by the fire. Wisps of smoke wafted from the fire to coil and curl around her before sliding back up the chimney. More smoke ran through the long, thick braids that hung down from her back and across the coal-black skin of shoulders exposed by the tight vest she wore instead of a shirt. Likewise exposed was the fresh stump of her left arm, which ended just below the elbow. Her familiar, Carissa, took the form of a winged serpent. Alone among the shades, she was no longer a thing purely of shadow, but wore feathers of smoke on her wings and the coils of her body.
Do you see a scar there now?
I opened my shirt.
No, but it was there in the morning. Both Triss and Carissa witnessed it.
Triss was nodding sheepishly.
Sorry, but I have to agree with Ciri here.
The word of a first blade is good enough for me.
Even if the dream was real, and Namra was somehow speaking to me from beyond death, that doesn't mean I'm supposed to hair off after the Son of Heaven. She said I was already on the right path, that I should follow justice. I had no plans to face the Son of Heaven when she said that. It could as easily have been a warning not to move against him.
What could be more just than killing the man who destroyed the temple?
You know, he's got a point there.
For hours, she says nothing. And now this?
Ron agreeing with Kilos. That's a first.
I turned to look at my apprentice. She was taller now than when I'd first met her. A young woman rather than a girl, and lovely in a hard, cold sort of way. Her hair was long and brown, her skin a bit paler than my own deep brown. A vicious scar carved its way down her forehead and across her cheek where she had nearly lost an eye. A scar that burned red now with barely suppressed anger.
Those who destroyed the temple do deserve to die.
Faran drew her swords as she rose. Swords of the goddess that had once belonged to a traitor blade by the name of Parsi.
I think we should start with this one.
She lifted the point of one of her swords to prick the skin at the base of Kilos' throat.
I've certainly earned it. I won't stop you.
Her arm remained perfectly still, but a drop of blood welled up on Kilos' skin and began to roll its way down the length of the sword toward her hand. Faran was a child of 9 at the fall of the temple, thrown out into the world to make her own way. None of us had suffered more than she had.
Well, isn't one of you going to order me to back off again?
No. If you can be talked out of it, you won't kill him. The goddess told me to seek justice. I say the same to you.
I was vaguely relieved that I wouldn't be the one who had to make that decision. The red drop rolled on down the sword until it finally touched the lapis oval of the guard, Namra's all-seeing eye. It clung there for a long moment, then dripped to the floor like a bloody tear. Baran flicked the blade back and up, away from Kilos' throat.
Son of a bitch!
She turned and stalked silently out of the room.
Interesting play there, Arl. I didn't know whether she'd go for it or not.
And I didn't care. You're on your own with her from now on.
I followed Faran out.